This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Futurists. I've seen quite a few derisory comments on Twitter lately about the role of futurists in South Africa. We have a fair few in the country. Recently, I had self-proclaimed futurist motivational speaker and a member of Singularity U's faculty, John Sarney, in studio talking about his new book. And it's entitled Foresight. And this issue of futurism is increasingly receiving attention because we see the rise of so-called pop futurists who blend and blur the lines between scientific rigor and peering into unknowable crystal balls. And it certainly raised the ire of a very well-known trend analyst, Bronwyn Williams of Flux Trends, on social media recently. So, Bronwyn, good evening. Good to have you on the show. And this is not really to poke holes or fun at John Sarney, but there are some issues with the rise of so-called pop futurists. How do you approach trend analysis or futurism from your perspective?
Okay, firstly, thank you for inviting me here tonight. When we talk about trend analysis, it's really simple. We're just looking at what's going on in the world right now. So you can compare trend analysis to economic analysis, for example. So we're looking at what is currently happening, what's happening more right now today than what's happening yesterday and what's happening less. So are people, say, buying more cheese? Then we have a trend for cheese. Or are people buying more red shoes? Then we have a red shoe trend, for example. So that's very simply what a trend is. There's no futurism to do with it. It's just purely looking at what's going on in the world, what are the current trajectories that we're on if we're following that same linear trajectory. However, as any good economist will tell you, past behavior is no guarantee of future performance. So we always try to bear that in mind. An analyst will only tell you what's currently happening and what you should be looking out for right now.
And our brains are very backward looking. They're hardwired to be such. If you look at markets, they're almost future predicting price mechanisms. And that's why I think it's so important to be able to extrapolate those trends out into what potentially might happen in the future. I've always had an issue with futurism because you can peer into an unknowable crystal ball, as I said, and opine on any one of these current trends that we see, AI, driverless cars, and make a prediction. And by the time your prediction is supposed to come true in 5 or 10 years' time, we've generally moved on to the next thing. We can never hold people who make these predictions to account.
Exactly, just like economics again. But that brings you, as you said, to the realm of futurism, which is different from trend analysis. So where trend analysis ends, you sort of get into the role of future studies, which is probably the better term to use, the more academic way of looking at the future. And what that does is try to look at what is the realm of possibility and what is the realm of impossibility, based on what we currently know about science and biology, for example. And then from there, look at what is probable. And what is probable is based on the trend trajectory, which we have tracked based on past performance or current data. But what is probable is not what is going to happen in the future, because unfortunately, that which is measured also gets changed. It changes both the measurer and the thing that is being changed. And that's the thing about the future. It hasn't happened yet. And we don't know what happens. Is when we look closely at an issue, we start to change that issue. So if we look at, say, even something like climate change, which is in the news quite a lot at the moment, the very fact that politicians and activists are addressing the issue is changing the data that is going to get put into that system and then shifts the realm of probability once again. So a good futurist won't predict the future. What they will try and do is to try and identify what could happen, what is likely to happen based on if we carry on with our current trend progression, and what should happen should we take very conscious steps to shift that probable future into a preferable future. So that's when we come into the realm of strategic planning. So once again, it's not predicting that that is going to come to fruition, but it is at least taking steps to then change what happens next to become a better future than what would have transpired if we did nothing.
Absolutely. And I like that, because the future, in truth, is something that we create. It isn't some preordained outcome that we're destined to follow. And so the actions we take today end up influencing that future. How would you classify the sort of futurism that John Sarney undertakes in his book?
Okay, so firstly, John's book is not really to do with the future at all. It's to do with technology. So he's got a lot of technophilia inside there. So you might consider John to be a technologist. That's someone who looks at what's going on with technology specifically and then has a view on how that technology will shape the future. But technology is just one piece of the future. If you are a traditional futurist, you'd also be looking at things like economics and social trends and political trends and environmental trends. You take a much broader, much more systemic view as to what's going on in the world. And secondly, I think John's mission is not really to predict the future, but rather more like pop psychology. He's actually more of a motivational speaker. His mission really is to change the way individuals approach their own lives, which is once again a bit different from a traditional futurist who would typically be looking at much bigger societal issues, often more from a national perspective or a whole country planning perspective, which is what most futurists do.
And what you touch on, that motivational speaking, pop psychology globally, a multi-billion dollar industry, and certainly fills bookstores and conference rooms, and it's made media celebrities out of people and capitalized wildly off growing self-consciousness of the recent, shall I call it, the narcissistic social media generation. But I do worry that it lacks a certain credibility with most. It's market-driven rather than peer-reviewed. What are your concerns with the rise of this sort of motivational speaking pop psychology trend, if we can call it that, in South Africa?
Sure, we can call it a trend. And if we look at South Africa at the moment, I mean, we are in tough times, economically speaking. And if we look at the future that many young people have, they're looking for options. They're looking for ways to improve themselves. So I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with pop psychology or with motivational speaking per se. But it does tend to get a little bit dangerous for me when pop futurists start talking about technology in particular as being inevitable and using their voice of authority within the community and within their followers to start making declarative assumptions as to whether a certain technological trajectory is good or bad, and using their voice to actually get people to buy into that. So one such thing would be this idea that I know John speaks about, that privacy is dead and that's a great thing. So that might be great for some people, but that's not a norm that I believe we should necessarily be instilling on the entire population, which comes back to what I was talking about earlier with good futurism or good futurists looking at multiple futures, because that's what it really comes down to. The future is wide open with choice. When we narrow that choice and try to direct people towards a particular view of utopia, that's when we run into problems, because my idea of utopia is probably very different to yours. And for me, the best thing we can be doing for human flourishing at large is to be looking at choice in the future and not trying to portray a one-size-fits-all future onto everyone.
Now, that is rather dangerous if you look at blind spots. We all have blind spots. And if you look at one particular outcome is inevitable, you're not looking at any of the blind spots. You're not taking on any of the other data that might contradict your particular worldview. From your vantage point, Bronwyn, what are some of the, and I've got you in studio, so I'm going to pick your brain on the big trends that you are witnessing at the moment that are going to have an outsized bearing on our potential futures?
Well, there is very much at the moment this trade-off between privacy and security on the one hand and personal freedom on the other. So if you look back to really where we were as humans a century ago, where we had the rise of a lot of authoritarian movements, we're very much moving to that same sort of pattern again. So we know history doesn't repeat itself exactly, as I've said, but as they also say, history does kind of rhyme a little bit. And humans often do tend to fall into the same traps over and over again. And if you look at what happens in the US, where they have mass shootings, and you look at South Africa, where we have high crime rates, you can see why it's quite easy to push a political agenda to make surveillance the norm and to basically reduce all of us down to our lowest common denominator and get us accustomed to being spied on, essentially, both in our homes and without our homes, in our cities and in our streets. But then it becomes quite a slippery slope when we can start turning into very dictatorial regimes like what's going on in China, where it's essentially an invisible net that population is enmeshed in. And of course, surveillance comes along with control, and control comes along with power, and the consolidation of power into very few hands is not necessarily, for me, one of the greatest things that can be happening for human flourishing right now. Once again, maybe you have a different view, particularly if you've been a victim of crime in South Africa, you might think that it's worth the sacrifice. But like with most things in life, the marginal returns on going down a particular path tend to peter off at some point.
Yeah, as we've seen, the initial response quite positive to the Vumatel surveillance cameras around Parkview and Parkhurst and the rest. Now all of a sudden people are saying, wait a minute, I'm not so comfortable in giving up all little of my privacy in exchange for a little bit more security. That was Bronwyn Williams, trend translator and future finance specialist for Flux Trends.